There was no doubt this bill to allow 5,000 slot machines and 150 table games would clear the state Senate. It's strongly backed by the Senate president and by ranking Democrats. When its lead sponsor, Manchester's Lou D'Alessandro, took to the floor, he stressed to colleagues that this may be gambling's year.
We started this journey 15 years ago, and the path has been bumpy, to say the least. But it seems that the path now has been cleared temporarily in one direction.
After the vote, Governor Hassan said in a statement that without casino revenue, New Hampshire residents could be, quote, denied access to the basic services needed to support their health and safety. But this bill still faces a tough fight in the House, and the governor appears to know it. Earlier this week, at her office's urging, the director of New Hampshire's Lottery Commission began reaching out to individual House lawmakers to discuss the bill. The state Republican Party says this may amount to improper lobbying, something Hassan's office denies. For NHPR News, I'm Josh Rogers. The crowded hearing in Representatives Hall got underway mid-morning. It opened with Committee Chair Mary Jane Wallner asking the crowd to acknowledge the bombing in Boston.
What I would like to do first is for all of us to stand and have a moment of silence.
Governor Maggie Hassan was the first to testify on the bill. She took the floor to applause. She then quieted the crowd with her own acknowledgement of the Boston attacks.
Just add that on behalf of the people of New Hampshire, I've expressed that our prayers and our thoughts are with the people of Boston and Massachusetts and everybody who was impacted by yesterday's events.
Hassan then barreled through a spirited 12-minute sales pitch for the policy that so far defined her governorship.
Senate Bill 152 allows for the licensing of one high-end, highly regulated destination casino in New Hampshire that will bring hundreds of millions of dollars.
When she was done, Hassan invited lawmakers to question her on the bill. But not a one of the 45 committee members did.
Seeing no questions, I thank you very much for appearing before us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Your testimony.
Good luck
thank
with
you.
Your work, folks.
Much of what followed during the four-hour hearing were familiar arguments. Gambling backers like Democratic Senator Lou D'Alessandro pitched the bill as an unadulterated boon.
Senate Bill 152 is an economic recovery job creation package. Let me repeat that. It's an economic recovery job creation package.
Representative David Campbell of Nashua, meanwhile, warned that not allowing a casino with up to 5,000 slot machines and 150 table games would leave New Hampshire the victim of casinos being built in Massachusetts.
If we do nothing, we will build a funnel on our border, and the giant sucking sound you hear will be hundreds of millions of dollars going to fill Massachusetts budget coffers instead of hundreds of million dollars for our own state New Hampshire budget.
But those opposed to the bill cast it as a poorly conceived rush job that is too friendly to casino operators.
Before you is a piece of legislation drafted by whom?
Ann Rice is Deputy Attorney General.
Do not be lured by the promise of easy money coming into this state. Our fiscal situation is not great, but it is temporary.
Other critics warn that if a casino does raise money, a lot of it will come from people too ill-informed to grasp basic math. Bob Schneider is an engineer from Claremont.
I guess I have to cut to the chase and say that this bill takes advantage of the poor and the ignorant. It is a regressive tax on the poor and the ignorant.
The casino bill will be getting more scrutiny later this morning. That's when the committee will be hearing expert testimony on gambling. Later, three subcommittees will take a look at the proposal, focusing on gambling regulation, the revenue aspects of the bill, and the effect a casino would have on local communities. For NHPR News, I'm Josh Rogers.
Salem town manager Keith Hickey has big dreams for the $18-plus million he thinks a casino would bring his town.
Property tax reduction, replacing a police department, road infrastructure needs work. We'd want to start putting some money aside.
The bill the Senate passed would give Salem 3% of machine income at the casino, which Hickey estimates at $13.5 million every year. On top of that, Hickey guesses at least $5 million in property taxes.
It would be, a phenomenal revenue generator for the region.
And Hickey will be the first to remind you that 81% of Salem residents voted in support of a casino on town meeting day.
Hi, how are you? Did you want to do takeout or dine-in?
Just outside of a popular lunch joint in Salem called Maddie's, Betty Becerra can't wait to talk about a casino at Rockingham Park.
I'm all for it, obviously. I don't see that we could lose at all.
People here know the talking points well. A casino could mean 1,300 new jobs, an $80 million license fee, and tax revenue for their town and the state.
Julius Caesar said, "Men gladly believe that which they wish."
Despite his constituents' enthusiasm, Salem State Rep. John Sitek says once a Massachusetts casino opens, a Salem casino would suffer, and the legislature would be forced to make concessions.
We saw it happen with the decline of Rockingham, and we would see it here as we would be drawn into this closer, perhaps too close, an arrangement with this operation.
To get a better sense of what a casino could really mean for Salem, we traveled 600-some miles southeast to Washington County, Pennsylvania, the home of Joe Montana, Perry Como, and a casino and racetrack called The Meadows. The Meadows is located in the township of North Strabane. It's owned by the same company that has an option to buy Rockingham Park, and the two regions have a lot of similarities. For one, The Meadows competes with a casino in Pittsburgh, which is about as far as Boston is from Salem. So it's worth asking, is North Strabane better off because of its casino? In a brand new fire station in North Strabane, Chief Mark Grimm nods toward a massive million-dollar neon yellow fire truck.
Yeah, this was when we at first got the gaming money. Most of the money for that year was allocated to this truck.
Before the casino went in, North Strabane had 2 full-time firefighters. Now it has 10. The fire department purchased 3 new trucks and decreased its average response times from 9 minutes to 3. Those are changes that make Salem Fire Chief Kevin Breen drool with envy.
The station is filled. There's no room to actually put a ladder truck here at Central Headquarters.
Breen says Salem's fire station is too small, too old, and seriously understaffed. Of course, casinos bring their own costs to towns like Salem and North Strabane. Detective Wybranowski handles North Strabane's white-collar crime investigations.
You know, gambling, there is people that have problems with it and that they are going to do what they need to get their money, you know, to play.
Like when a financial manager stole $700,000 from his employers in the healthcare industry a couple towns over and spent it at the Meadows. But Wybranowski, whose colleagues call him Wybo, says those events are rare. For the most part, he says, the casino hasn't brought crime rings or prostitution to North Strabane. It's brought fender benders.
We have a older population that visits the casino. For some reason, they find it difficult to drive through the parking garages.
The detective says, sure, these minor events require more patrolling, but compared to those expenses, the casino revenue has been a windfall for his department, which is how, perhaps, Millennium Gaming has won the loyalty of North Strabane's public safety workers. Back at the brand-new fire station across from the casino, Fire Chief Mark Grimm shows me his station's unofficial new patch.
It's not our department patch, it's just we have a station patch. And obviously the dice and the roulette wheel and cards.
It looks like the patch of a normal public officer, except for the horseshoes and lucky sevens.
It was kind of like a thanks back to the casino we have a great relationship with them.
The town of North Strabane receives about $2.7 million each year from machine and table game income. The county receives more like $8 million, which it administers via a grant application process. The rules determining local shares were part of the state's casino law, which passed in 2004. County Commissioner Larry Maggi traveled to New Hampshire to testify on behalf of Millennium Gaming. He says his only regret is that property taxes haven't gone down.
It has reduced property taxes, but not what the people would like to see and not what I'd like to see.
Taxes have been mitigated thanks to the casino, he says, but not actually reduced. Nevertheless, it's hard to find any actual critics of the casino in Washington County.
Hi. Four? Would you like a booth or a table?
Booth.
Fred Wilkinson is out to dinner at the Union Cafe with his fiance.
We had townships here that were struggling to make new sewer systems, water plants, water treatment plants. It's gone. That struggle's gone.
Since the casino went in 6 years ago, Washington County has spent its $8 million annual take on public parks, bridges, water and sewage infrastructure, new historical society buildings, sports equipment, and more. But back in Salem, Representative John Sitek says those outcomes are the result of powerful regulatory structures that New Hampshire just doesn't have.
As I said, I'm impressed by what I heard about the Washington County situation in Pennsylvania, but I don't see that here. And I don't see the interest in it here that I would like to see.
So when the time comes, SciTech says, with Salem in mind, he'll be voting nay on a casino. For NHPR, I'm Emily Corwin.
Bill Wortman may have started off as a CPA, but he clearly enjoys the role of casino developer that he's morphed into. A beefy man who favors a casual open-collar look, Wortman began his gaming career in 1978 at one of the iconic casinos on the Las Vegas Strip.
My first job was as financial controller at Caesars World. I then became CFO of Caesars Palace.
At Caesars Palace, everything was done big.
We had a Caesars Palace Grand Prix. There was a Grand Prix of Monaco, the Grand Prix of Germany, the Grand Prix of, and there was a Caesars Palace Grand Prix. At that period of time, it was the location, it was a world center of boxing. I've personally done 17 world championship fights. I did Sugar Ray Leonard's first, I did Muhammad Ali's last.
But Wortman left Caesars in the early 80s, and ultimately, with business partner Bill Paulus, formed Millennium Gaming. The two men found there was another way to make a profit in the casino business, a way that departed from the extravagant and the grandiose. Millennium Gaming's newest casino is The Meadows in western Pennsylvania, about 25 miles south of Pittsburgh. With some 3,300 slot machines, it's about the same size as what might be built in New Hampshire. It's well appointed, with plush, multi-hued carpet, and space-age-looking light fixtures.
Let's scooch to the middle of the casino. Table games run right down the center of the casino. Very traditional lineup of tables, blackjack, roulette, craps, mini baccarat.
Sean Sullivan is the casino's general manager. Surrounding the table games are the slot machines.
A little over 2,000 of our machines are penny machines. Now, today's market, you can bet $4, $5 on a penny machine. But a lot of them are here just playing pretty light. Our most popular games are penny machines.
The Meadows does provide a high rollers room for those who want to bet larger sums, but it makes sure that it appeals to a more humble clientele from the nearby counties where heavy industry once loomed large. Beyond bringing in performers like country singer Willie Nelson, Wortman says the casino added a bowling alley.
With the individuals that frequent the Meadows, they are more blue-collar workers that, you know, bowling is a fun activity for them.
The Meadows pulled in about $24 million in gross revenues in April, a modest dip from last year, but up from the winter months. It's viewed generally as a success, and that performance is due in part to an approach that Wortman and his partner honed in Las Vegas. In the early and mid-2000s, they built two casinos, not on the famous Las Vegas Strip, but farther out of town. Their target, the locals. Gaming consultant Randy Fine says the Las Vegas locals market can be very competitive.
That's a market in which they have to fight head-to-head every day.
Fine says Millennium wins customers by giving players better odds and giving them a good deal for their money.
The food product, rather than being built around celebrity chefs, is more around high-quality but inexpensive buffets, Italian, Mexican. The entertainment, as opposed to having Cirque du Soleil, locals casinos will have sort of lower-level acts, B and C acts, that will come through every weekend.
Another observer of the Las Vegas scene, Anthony Curtis of the consumer guide Las Vegas Advisor, says Millennium Gaming has come up with a signature method.
Their bread is buttered by the less flashy, the less shiny sort of customer who doesn't need to go to a big overblown type of casino. You know, they want to go somewhere where they feel comfortable, where they feel at home, where they know the people, where they like the promotions, they feel they're getting a good shake.
In the eyes of the group, Granite State Coalition Against Expanded Gambling, this appeal to locals raises the specter of convenience gambling, in contrast to the so-called high-end casino Governor Hassan often describes. The group notes that Millennium Gaming has seen about $175,000 in fines over the past 4 years at the Meadows. Wortman says that represents 13 self-reported instances, mostly when gambling addicts or underage people got onto the gaming floor, a tiny fraction of the millions of visitors that he says have passed through the doors. He says he's pleased with how the Meadows turned out and the feeling there is what people can expect to see if Millennium Gaming opens a casino in New Hampshire.
It will maintain the comfortable Cheers atmosphere. That's what we do. We have that in Pennsylvania. We have that in both locations in Nevada. That's our style. We believe that style works anywhere.
Wortman feels he knows how to attract customers, but he also seems to be wary of the perception that he only caters to a local crowd. When he talks about the reach of a Salem casino, he first says a 25-mile radius. And then he corrects himself and says 50 miles or more. What he's certain about is Rockingham Park as a location is almost a clone of the Meadows, close to a state border, near a major city, and right off an interstate. It's a place where he's betting the odds are very much in his favor. For NHPR News, I'm John Greenberg.
Ed Talbot is the picture of a put-together guy. He sits in a Boston cafe, well-dressed, his silver hair carefully buzz-cut, and a manila folder full of facts and figures within easy reach. But he admits his life wasn't always this organized. 35 years ago, it was a mess. He was addicted to gambling.
And finally, on the last night of racing at Taunton Dog Track, November 30th, 1977, I put whatever money I had left on a dog by the name of Perfect Treasure. The starting box opened, the dogs came out, and Perfect Treasure fell. And my dream world came crashing down. 5 days later, I was contemplating suicide with a dive off a bridge.
Like many gambling addicts, the road to rock bottom was a long one for Talbot. Over 8 years, he gained weight, smoked 3 packs a day. His wife kicked him out of the house. His mother begged him to stop on her deathbed. And then there was his daughter.
With so many times when she was growing up, gymnastics routines, you know, she was big into gymnastics. I was never there. Birthday parties, Daddy had to take off and go to the track.
Since that last race in 1977, Talbot hasn't gambled at all. And he's now working to establish a New Hampshire chapter of the Council on Problem Gambling to help others. He says the state doesn't have nearly enough prevention or treatment services in place.
If you go on the 211 line for services, there's not even a mention of problem gambling. So, you know, who do you call?
Not a gambling addiction counselor. About half of all states, including Massachusetts, certify specialists in problem gambling. New Hampshire doesn't. And Talbot says substance abuse counselors aren't effective substitutes. The best bet for help in New Hampshire is to find one of the 5 Gamblers Anonymous meetings. They're all in the southern part of the state.
It's intensely and extraordinarily frustrating.
Keith White heads the National Council on Problem Gambling in Washington, D.C. The council's hotline ends up taking a lot of calls from here. Over an 18-month period, the group counted almost 1,000 calls from New Hampshire. White says no one knows for sure how many people in the state might have a problem with gambling. His group provides a wide estimate of somewhere between 13,000 and 40,000. If someone does call the hotline, the group refers him or her to one of those 5 Gamblers Anonymous meetings, or in a pinch, to Alcoholics Anonymous. While the council is adamantly neutral on all casino debates, White says he's worried about how New Hampshire would handle expanded gaming.
New Hampshire is, of course, one of the oldest modern U.S. lotteries. To still not provide any services, not provide any funding for problem gambling, you know, that doesn't set a very good track record. Even if New Hampshire were to put tons of money into problem gambling programs now with this new casino bill, there's no infrastructure whatsoever to build on. So we're very concerned that the state would be able to manage this in a responsible manner.
The Senate-passed bill, SB 152, does address gambling addiction. It calls for an estimated $1.7 million to go toward treatment and prevention in 2015. Within a couple years, the state figures that number would shoot up to about $4.5 million. Once a casino is fully established, the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies estimates the state could have to pay up to $3.7 million for treatment and prevention each year.
So then there are a whole other set of things that are probably worth talking about at some point. One is the
Steve Norton heads the Center for Public Policy Studies. He recently testified before a House subcommittee looking at social impacts of a casino. Opponents say that includes more bankruptcies and divorces, higher unemployment, more welfare claims, and property crimes.
Pathological gambling doesn't occur the instant that you put a casino up. Just like the revenue question, there's some timing associated with it. And that's particularly important if you're interested in developing programs designed to mitigate any potential pathological problem gambling.
Norton and other researchers also say that a few years after the initial spike in problem gambling, the numbers do start to go down. But in general, Professor Clyde Barrow of UMass Dartmouth says concerns about social costs are overblown. And that's what he told lawmakers at a recent lunch presentation for them in Concord, where Millennium Gaming made the case for expanded gambling at Rockingham Park in Salem.
There have been three comprehensive cost benefits analysis of expanded gaming in the states of Iowa, Illinois, and Louisiana. And in every single case, those studies concluded that the benefits to the state outweighed the cost by about a 2-to-1 ratio.
Casino supporters, like Governor Maggie Hassan, argue that New Hampshire already faces these problems, thanks to casinos in neighboring states.
Gambling is here in New Hampshire, and it is all around us. And even groups that say they don't particularly like casinos concede that if we don't have one, we will lose at least $75 million a year in social costs and lost rooms and meals revenues down to Massachusetts or over to Maine.
If the current casino bill becomes law, the state's Department of Health and Human Services would oversee the money set aside for treatment and prevention. The Senate's bill designates 1% of slot machine revenue to DHHS. The state has tried this kind of setup once before, with the Alcohol Fund established in 2001. 5% of gross liquor profits were to go to DHHS for addiction services, right off the top. It was fully funded for 1 year. In 2003, the state began putting the money into the general fund. Last biennium, general fund expenditures for alcohol and drug addiction programs were cut in half. Joe Harding directs the state's Bureau of Drug and Alcohol Services. He says between state and federal funding, right now, the department can treat about 5% of drug addicts and alcoholics. And he hesitates to say if the state would keep its commitment to funding gambling addiction programs.
I really wouldn't know. And you know, that's something you'd have to take up with the legislature.
Harding says it would take at least a year to get a gambling addiction program ready to go. Counselor and recovered gambling addict Ed Talbot says that's exactly why he needs state funds for his fledgling New Hampshire chapter of the Council on Problem Gambling.
I think the biggest thing that's holding us up right now is the casino bill itself. Everybody is, well, let's see what happens with the casino bill. I'd be very, very surprised if we get state funding if the casino bill doesn't pass, from what I've heard.
Talbot says with $200,000, the council could do a lot. Right now, though, it's still working on getting nonprofit status from the IRS. Between various fees, getting a P.O. box, and all the little nitty-gritties of starting a nonprofit, the council has spent $900. Right now, it's got $100 in the bank. For NHPR News, I'm Amanda Loader.
Come on. Four more spins. Come on.
Geraldine Pajak and her friend Pauline Stripp feed bills into a gladiator-themed slot machine at the Meadows in Pennsylvania.
Two more, Pauline. Come on.
Pajak spends about $100 here about once a week. That's $5,200 a year. $3,500 of that goes to the state and local governments through taxes. The rest goes to the casino. But does any of Pajak's money make its way back to local businesses? In Salem, that's bakery owner Brian Costa's biggest concern.
And we're doing a 10-inch cake. And what flavored cake you want? Are we doing a three-layer?
Costa doesn't know what a casino would mean for his business.
It all depends on what the casino plans on doing. Is there going to be a hotel? Is there going to be many restaurants? Is there going to be coffee, desserts?
In Washington, Pennsylvania, there are two kinds of businesses really making bank from casino visitors, other than the casino itself. There's the Tanger Outlet Mall, which opened a year after the casino in 2008, and the seven big hotels that have popped up along Racetrack Road, like the Courtyard Marriott. Before I meet Tara Morrow, the hotel sales director, I see her black Hummer. Morrow says here in natural gas country, she's just showing her Western Pennsylvania pride.
I mean, we're in Washington County, the home of the gas and oil energy companies. And
people who work for the natural gas industry fill a lot of rooms at the seven hotels on Racetrack Road. But the majority, Morrow says, are here for the casino. She says five more hotels are being built nearby this year, one of them at the casino itself. But Morrow says she's not concerned about all that competition.
Obviously, with market research, there's demand in the area, and it's going to keep growing. So, yeah, I have a little bit of a concern with some more hotels being built, but I think in the summer, you know, we're going to need them.
Like I said, the Meadows is planning to open its own hotel, but it doesn't have one open yet. Millennium Gaming's plans for Rockingham Park, however, do include an on-premise hotel. Washington County's tourism office reports that visitors spent $78 million on lodging in 2011. That's an increase of 15% since the year before. Overall, tourism spending increased by 48% after the casino opened. Visitors spent $451 million in the county in 2007 and $670 million in 2011. When it comes to a casino in Salem, numbers like that put dollar signs in the eyes of Salem commercial real estate developer Joe Friedman.
Well, the people that work there and that go there need services, such as medical services and legal services, engineering services, retail services. So there is definitely a spillover effect for all the businesses in Salem.
It's not clear if a casino would drive private growth in Salem. A 2006 report from the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston looks at casinos nationally. It states that casinos will only bring money into local economies if they draw customers from out of town. That's a major sticking point in the statewide casino debate. In Salem, many business owners are optimistic about a casino, but some, especially in the entertainment industry, are concerned. T-Bone's restaurant owner Tom Boucher believes Millennium will build a convenience casino, something attractive to locals only. But if a casino did bring out-of-towners, he still doesn't think the Salem branch of his franchise would benefit.
The answer to that is unequivocally no, because the casino is certainly going to have a restaurant, and the casino will have an advantage over any restaurant because of the monopolistic advantage they have of a slot machine, which is obviously highly profitable. They're able to offset and charge less for food, for drinks.
Millennium Gaming tries to placate people like Boucher by offering customer rewards in the form of gift cards to local businesses. In Pennsylvania, the Meadows Casino has given a cumulative $3.3 million in locally redeemable vouchers. The casino's owner, Bill Wortman, recently promised to extend this program to Rockingham Park. He addressed a large crowd in the former racetrack's Belmont Road.
As we sign neighborhood partners up, and it can be restaurants, it could be other things. We have a car wash.
But one independently owned restaurant near the Meadows in Pennsylvania hasn't felt the love. Since the casino opened at the racetrack, Martin Troy's Timberwood Grill and Pub has been hurting.
When it was a racetrack, people who worked at the track, whether it be the drivers, trainers, or the grooms, before the races or after the races, you know, the patrons and the people who work there would stop in, have a couple drinks or grab a meal or something else, where it just really doesn't happen now.
That's probably because employees eat for free at the casino. But getting employees to spend money around town may be the key to spreading casino profits to nearby businesses. A second finding from the same Federal Reserve Bank of Boston report shows that casino visitors generally don't shop or eat around town. Rather, their money enters the local economy from the pockets of the people who serve them, casino employees. Millennium Gaming's projections put about 1,300 employees at a Rockingham Park casino. That's similar to their Pennsylvania operation. There at the Meadows, General Manager Sean Sullivan says more than half of the employees are full-time.
The combined payroll is over $30 million. With benefits over $50 million.
And Sullivan says the average salary is $43,000, not including tips or benefits.
It's what we call family-sustaining opportunities. I mean,
on top of that, Sullivan says the casino spent $58 million last year for goods and services in Pennsylvania, $19 million directly in Washington County. New Hampshire's pending bill puts no requirements on how casino developers spend money. But in Massachusetts, towns have agreements with developers requiring they hire local residents and buy products and services in town. Whatever the details, Salem developer Joe Friedman says a casino is right for Salem. He explains the town's insignia says it all.
The seal for the town of Salem says industry, recreation, and commerce.
But whether a casino is written in Salem's destiny, right now, that's in the hands of lawmakers. For NHPR, I'm Emily Corwin.
The New Hampshire House has rejected a bill to legalize a casino in southern New Hampshire by a vote of 199 to 164. And NHPR's Michael Brindley was on hand for the debate today in Representatives Hall. He joins me now with an update. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
There were several hours of debate this afternoon, not to mention weeks of lobbying leading up to the vote. Not your typical session of the House, I take it.
Not typical, but, it was cramped. It was hot. A lot of passions flying around the room. A lot of basically supporters and opponents making their case for this bill. And what you had was a vote 199 to 164. it's basically dead. I think the thought is that the margin is so wide that even an effort to wrap it into the budget would probably not pass the House.
Now, this has been the big story throughout this legislative session. What were supporters of the casino arguing today in the House?
Well, we've been hearing these arguments, you know, obviously since Governor Maggie Hassan proposed this in her budget, $80 million in licensing fees. Supporters, you know, basically said the polls showed that people want this, that it will create jobs, that there's an inevitability of the social cost, whether we do this or not, with Massachusetts moving forward with its own casinos. And so you had David Campbell of Nashua, representative, making kind of, we had about maybe almost 20 speakers before the vote actually came. His argument was pretty clear that, you know, we either do this or we don't. If we don't do this, Massachusetts is going to reap the benefits and we're going to still have those social costs.
So before you push your button today, please remember what two-thirds of New Hampshire voters understand and what hopefully a majority of us will also recognize, that given the realities of gambling nationally, regionally, and right here in New Hampshire, the fiscal, budget, and social consequences of doing nothing are far worse than the alternative.
So basically what you had was Campbell and many supporters and opponents going back and forth for about 3 hours, you know, trying to sway the House. And obviously the opponents of the casino bill won out today.
Now, what were the opponents saying as they tried to make their cases?
A lot of the same arguments we've been hearing before, that there's a lack of regulation, that we're rushing this process through without really having an oversight that we need. It's an unstable revenue source, that New Hampshire would be beholden to Millennium Gaming by relying on that revenue moving forward. Representative Steve Valancourt of Manchester probably had the most impassioned speech of the day in opposition. He threw out a lot of, you know, negative thoughts toward the bill, but calling it corrupt, calling Millennium Gaming greedy. He really just kind of threw it all out there.
This is a terrible bill, a corrupt bargain for the state of New Hampshire. That's why I come before you as a supporter of more gambling to say this is not the way. Better to do nothing now and leave open the option of getting it right in the future than in throwing the money away today.
And that was the sentiments echoed by many of the opponents. That it's just a lot of the same things, that they support expanded gambling, but this is not the bill. And so by the vote, the way it went, it killed the process of even going through many of the amendments that had already been crafted, that were drafted to try to address those concerns that people like Valancourt had.
Now, Governor Maggie Hassan had counted on casino money licensing fees as a part of her state budget. What's been the governor's reaction, and then where does the budget process go from here?
Well, she released a statement, which I would say is she's disappointed, but also seems resigned to the fact that this probably won't happen. She said she's disappointed to see the House of Representatives kind of squash that open debate of the amendments that other members of the House had worked on crafting through the supercommittee process. So she was disappointed on that end, but also she says, you know, that moving forward, we have to accept the fact that this may not happen. You know, she says without passing SB 152, the path to doing the things that she wants to do, job creation, support higher education, will be more difficult. But she says the people of New Hampshire expect us to do difficult things. So I think she's prepared to fight that fight.
NHPR's Michael Brindley, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
In the 1940s, Rockingham Park was the place to be. Trains packed with Bostonians pulled right up to the grandstand. 79-year-old Charlotte Hamilton saw it all. Her father was a starter at the track, and she practically grew up there. When she was 10, she rode in a plow horse derby for local kids. Her dad let her use a horse from the stables.
I had a horse, and his name was Major, and he was 17 hands high. He had no bridle. I had a hunk of rope around his nose, up around his neck, no saddle. And they dropped a flag, okay, and everybody took off. My horse, Major, turned around and went the other way. I'm sure my father, my poor father, was so embarrassed.
Serious, regular thoroughbred racing had only been going on for about a decade. There were a few illegal races back when Rockingham Park was first built in 1906. Then, in the 1930s, new owner Lou Smith convinced lawmakers to legalize racing at the Rock. During his 36-year tenure, track revenues, on average, made up 20% of the state's general fund appropriations. But things have changed in many ways, says Hamilton.
I have ever so many memories. I could cry right now because of the deplorable condition of the barn area. You know, that's a lot of acres over there going to waste, going to rot.
But even back in the 1940s, most racetracks, like Rockingham Park, were on borrowed time.
It's clear that there's been a big change over the past 60 or 70 years.
That's David Schwartz. He's a gambling historian at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
In the 1950s, it's still fairly strong, but it's beginning to weaken. In the 60s, as TV becomes more widespread, you really start to see that shift, and that really manifests itself in the 70s and 80s.
I don't have the credits yet.
If there's anyone who appreciates TV, it's Larry Seaman. He's program director at Salem Community Television. He's editing a segment for broadcast. Seaman grew up just over the border in Haverhill.
I remember listening on my little transistor radio, and they would always broadcast the last race of the day.
And for an 18-year-old in the early 70s, The Rock was still the place to be.
And actually, I think you had to be 21 to get in, but I was in with my brothers who were of age, and they took me in, and I was awed at the facility. It was really something special.
One of the oldest thoroughbred racetracks in the country is in ruins this morning. Rockingham Park in Salem, New Hampshire is the victim. And
in 1980, fire gutted the grandstand. The owners sold to Rockingham Venture, and they built the red-roofed grandstand that greets visitors today.
We're sitting just past the finish line, looking out on the racetrack.
Company president Ed Callahan sits in a room full of empty seats and stacked chairs. It's the quietest place here. Dust covers everything. The track is barren, with paint peeling off crooked signs. This is where racing fans once cheered their horses.
The sun's shining. It's about 80-75, and out here it's like a wind tunnel. Wow.
Today, exactly. Workers use the area as a shortcut to go outside on their smoke breaks. Abandoned buildings and empty stables litter the 170-acre site. Callahan says he's doing the best he can to keep it all up on a tight income. He says things were going well when Rockingham Park reopened in the 80s, but it was crippled in the 90s when other states started allowing slots and casinos at racetracks. With that extra cash, they could offer much bigger purses.
Well, at that time, we were offering about $100,000 a day in purses. To be competitive, we had to be in about $180,000, $200,000 a day range.
So they switched to harness racing about 10 years ago, where horses pull jockeys riding in carts. That ended in 2010, when the state cut the Racing Commission's regulatory funding.
Give me a $1 key shot, 128.
9 and 3, and 9 and 10.
Today, simulcasting is the last vestige of horse racing at the old track. Stacy Rudolph and Maureen Erickson have been working here for 25, 30 years. They handle the simulcasting bets.
Do you know how to gamble?
Yes, you should come and see us. We'll train you how to bet the horses.
You know, you just put them in. This here, you got to pick out your horse, and you develop a little fanship for it. You should check
it out. The influence and prestige of Rockingham Park was at its peak from the 1930s through the 60s. Seabiscuit raced here, and so did one of Bing Crosby's horses. Louis B. Mayer, Wilt Chamberlain, and the Crown Prince of Liechtenstein made appearances. And for now, with no new casino on the horizon, Callahan says they'll just have to keep doing the best they can. But eventually, the owners might have to consider taking The Rock in a different direction. For NHPR News, I'm Amanda Loader.